Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hey, how exciting. This morning we're going to talk
about... Good morning.
And we're going to talk about something that we're really excited to talk about.
Yes, sleep. One of the things I love, and I also it drives me bananas as well. So it's good.
So we got a special guest on today. So Dr. Michael Bruce, America's guru of sleep, or the sleep doctor. There's so many. Oh, you've got so many titles, don't you?
I've acquired a few. You're right.
Yeah. Welcome. We are excited about having this conversation today and talking a little bit about sleep.
And a lot of our clients
here. I'm excited to have it. I love Australia, Western Australia. I haven't had a chance to be there yet, but I am more than happy to be talking to all you folks about sleep. That's for sure.
You're about to go to sleep. We've just woken up.
Right.
Before we get started, one of the things we like to do is just share a little bit, if you've got a favorite song or something that you've been, top of mind, or actually something related to sleep, a song related to sleep, that might be a great one.
I'm going with Dreamweaver from the
70s. Oh, yes. Dreamweavers. I can't remember the rest of the words.
That's it. At least you got
la, 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 la. I just can't remember the rest.
There you go. You're in there, man.
I'm sure that's going to stick in someone's head today. I'm sure of it. Michael. So listen, Eric, clients are also really excited to have you on board, and lots of people have asked questions and that sort of stuff. So we're just going to plow straight into it. Again, great to have you here, and let's get rocking and rolling.
So we both took your chrono quiz.
Yeah.
Your quiz to figure out what time.
And I suggest everybody take the chrono
absolutely
quiz.
To see what chronotype you are and what type of sleeper you are. And I want to go into that a little bit today.
Okay.
Well, you came out as a lion, didn't you?
I'm a lion, kind of edging towards a little bit of bear, but I'm definitely I'm a lion. And I don't know whether I've always been that way. And that's one of the questions I want to ask about. Are we always that way?
Me too.
I have very young children, so I've no choice. My wife, will stay in bed until 12 o'clock in the afternoon, but I'm up. And like an example is last night, I was, 7 o'clock, something unplugged me, and then suddenly I was like, and my kids are still running around. I'm like, just go to bed, please go to bed. And then by the time I was able to just sit down for a minute, I was out. And my wife is looking at me, she goes, she's like, you are useless at nighttime. And I'm literally useless at nighttime. But first thing in the morning, I'm like, let's rock and roll. I'm up and I can observe when I'm coming out of REM. I can remember my dreams really well. I understand there's a lot of uploading and downloading going on. There's a lot of balancing going on. So I really want to get into that, and I really want to talk about that stuff with you today as well.
I came up as a bear, but I feel like I'm maybe more... I like to be up late at night, or what I feel is that I can't... When I'm in... Like, we have big days, in our seminars and stuff. I can't just go home and go to sleep. You go home and you pass out. You're out. Whereas I'm like, I just need a half an hour just to decompress. And I can actually stay awake for even an hour or two after that, even though I have to get up early in the morning. So I feel like I might have tendencies of a wolf. But as much as I say that, I still function well in the morning. I was up at 5 this morning, so it's not like I can't do it.
So
I came up as a bear.
So here's the deal is if people go to chronoquiz.com, you can take this quiz. It takes like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And what we're evaluating is your genetic potential sleep schedule, basically, is the way you might want to think about it. So believe it or not, I could look at your DNA results. So for example, if you did like one of those DNA services like 23andMe or Ancestry.com or one of those, it would actually tell us if you were an early bird or a night owl. Right. And that's what we're taught. It's there. You got to look for it, but it's there.
Wow.
So what's fascinating is you were born a lion. Let me put it to you this way. Actually, everybody is born a lion. All infants and itty bitty babies are lions. And for folks who don't know what I'm talking about in terms of a lion, that's an early bird. Right. And so I came up with a new category system for people to be able to follow, to actually figure out a new way to live your life based on your sleep schedule. So lions are my early birds. You've probably all heard of that concept before. Mm-hmm. And wolves are my night owls. People in the middle are bears. And people who are not such good sleepers are called dolphins. So Michael, how on earth did you figure all this out? What's going on? Help us, help us, help us. Okay, so let's get to the meat of it. In back in the 70s, chronotypes, which is kind of the term that we use, was something that was discovered fairly early on, this early bird idea and the night owl idea. We weren't really sure about anybody else. We didn't know what kind of, we talked about people in the middle. We ended up calling them hummingbirds after about 10 years, which is really a dumb name. But nobody was taking into account people with genetic insomnia. So my contribution to the literature was about 5 years ago, I wrote a book called The Power of When, meaning when to do things. And you should do things based on your chronotype. And so when you take the quiz, you can you either fall into early bird, which is what we call a lion, in the middle, which is what we call a bear, night owl, which is what we call a wolf, or insomniac, which is what we call the dolphin. Each one has different characteristics, but the most important thing to know is each one has a very different sleep schedule. And so here's what's fascinating is this is actually based on your hormones, not just your sleep. And it affects your entire hormonal system. So as an example, once you figure out that you're a lion, you also know how your cortisol is going to run for the day, how your adrenaline is going to run for the day, your serotonin, your dopamine. All of those things are in very predictable patterns. And to be honest with you, it kind of sounds like your partner is on a different schedule, right? And she or he may be a bear, wolf, dolphin, what have you. And so this is incredibly common when I've got couples who are saying like, okay, he's one of these, she's one of these, or she's this, whatever. How does that work, Michael? And so that's what the book is really all about, is identification of your chronotypes, and then basically how to live with how to live with your own chronotype, and then how to live with everybody else's chronotype. Fantastic. And so it turned into a communication tool for many families, which I thought was kind of fun. So one of the things that happens is if one person takes the quiz, the whole family ends up taking the quiz. And then all of a sudden it gets really interesting. Let me give you an example. So I have a 17-year-old daughter who is officially a wolf. She is a night owl. By the way, everybody in my house is a wolf. I am, my wife is, and so is my son. So we call ourselves the wolf pack, as it were, right? If I walk into my daughter's room in the morning and say, hey, you know, Carson, it's time to wake up. She's like, ugh. Like she barely, I mean, if I'm like, what's on tap for today? What do you got going on? She's like, ugh, right? If I walk into her room at 8 o'clock at night and I ask the exact same question, I'm there for an hour and a half.
She's on fire.
Exactly. I have to meet her where she is, right? Because she chronotypically can't really change anything and doesn't even understand that. So my relationship with my daughter has actually been improved dramatically merely by me understanding, leave her alone in the mornings, Michael, you're gonna be much better off. These are the types of advances that we can do in, with chronotypes. But to be honest with you, it gets even more interesting. I figured out chronotypes for exercise. We figured out chronotypes for sex. We figured out chronotypes for eating cheeseburgers, asking your boss for a raise. Like, literally, there's 50 or so different activities that we know fall interestingly on the chronotypical scale. And once you know your chronotype, you know exactly when to do them.
So, but that has so many, like, that's so many implications, especially when it comes to industry and work. Like, that's just insane. You, if you're hiring a wolf, you're hiring redundancy in some ways, because at the end of the day, these guys are not productive until they're not in the friggin' job until 11 o'clock.
And here's, so you're right. And here's the interesting part. When you look at wolves, that's who all the creatives are. Right. And so if you've ever been in an ad agency or even in any place of work where there's a creative component to it, never call an 8 a.m. meeting and think any creatives are going to show up, because they never will. So interestingly, you bring up an interesting point about business. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with, there's a guy over here in the United States. His name is Dave Asprey. He does this thing called Bulletproof. Bulletproof Coffee, if you've heard of that. So when I first came out with chronotypes, Dave came right up to me and he's like, I'm chronotyping my entire organization. And that's what we did. So everybody that worked at Bulletproof actually got their chronotype taken, and then they started scheduling meetings based on when people would be focused, right? Because the biggest problem at work in meetings is people are screwing around and they're not paying attention. And then of course they don't do the assignments, or they have to be managed more, it costs more, blah, blah, blah. But if you had a meeting where you knew that every employee in that room was focused and in attention, your meetings would be shorter and they'd be far more effective. That's what chronotypes can do for your business.
So I think in my brain, I mean, I come from the old school of 9 to 5, blah, blah, blah. That's when the business is open and da, 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 da. So, but industry now obviously is changing that, you know, companies can be open till 1 o'clock in the morning. It doesn't freaking matter as long as the guys are getting their work done and producing what they need to produce.
Right. And especially now during COVID, everybody's
more people are working from home and on their own timelines a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I think the whole world has changed. We were just discussing this yesterday, you know, like West Australia is the mecca for mining globally. Any major deal in the world happens in WA. It's all signed off here. All the legal teams are here. You know, the richest woman in the world lives in West Australia. Gina Reinhart. So they're, you know, those major organizations are here, but the buildings in the city are now empty and they've totally relooked at things and they're saying, hey, we're getting way more productivity out of people at home than we are if they were here screwing around, getting in here, getting their coffee, standing at watering fountains. And so I think industry has changed majorly. So I think in terms of what you're doing, the fit for that at the moment must be absolutely astronomical.
It's really quite fascinating. I have to, you know, for a moment, just get a little serious. You know, I feel really purposeful right now because so many people are struggling with their sleep and just trying to figure it out. I mean, let's be honest, this is an unprecedented time. The level of stress, even if you're not in an environment where there is a lot of COVID, you're not in a hot spot. Yeah. Maybe you're worried about somebody that is, or a family member, or, you know, things like that. So, you know, I think now is the time to kind of push the pause button for a second and reevaluate ourselves. And sleep is certainly something that many people have ignored for an incredibly long period of time. And of course, immune function is directly tied to sleep. So, you know, for folks out there who are sleep deprived, you know, maybe you should move to West Australia where there is no COVID, because that's probably the best way. You're not going to get it, because if you're sleep deprived and you're in a hot spot, you're going to get it.
So talk to us a little bit about that, about the sleep deprivation and not getting enough sleep and not being, not understanding, I suppose, what's best for you and the effects of that on people.
So I believe that sleep is personal. Right. And so I'm not the guy that comes in and says, everybody needs 8 hours. Number one, that's incorrect. Yeah. That is a myth. Number two, it doesn't work that way. So let me tell you about my life and how I sleep. And then I'm going to explain a little bit more about what is sleep deprivation.
Right.
So I go to bed at midnight every night, almost on the nose. I wake up at 6:13 the next day, literally on the nose. It's not like I'm planning this. This is my brain is popping me away.
100%.
All asleep, right? I'm a wolf, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm a little bit of an early wolf because I'm getting up at 6:15 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
My body's done with sleep. The more consistent I made my sleep schedule, by the way, when I started, I was waking up at 7:30.
Right.
In 2 years of keeping an incredibly consistent sleep schedule, I now wake up at 6:13.
Yeah.
I have gained an hour and 15 minutes into my day just by being consistent with my sleep. But the point I'm making about sleep deprivation is, if one of you slept for 6 hours and 13 minutes, you might be terribly sleep deprived.
Yeah.
Right? So it's individual and it's personal. Michael, how on earth do we figure this out? Number one, sleep based on your chronotypical sleep schedule. And you will pull out a lot of the unnecessary things that happen in sleep. And your sleep begins to condense and the quality begins to rise.
Right.
That's number one. Remember, sleep deprivation isn't just a minutes or hours. It's also about quality of sleep.
Yeah.
Right? You could get 8 hours of sleep, but if it was really crappy sleep,
It's not
you're sleep deprived.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So quality versus quantity.
Right.
And then understanding sleeping in accordance with your chronotype.
Exactly. And so let me give everybody a super simple formula to try even before you learn what your chronotype is. Okay.
Right.
So we know that the average sleep cycle is 90 minutes long, right?
Yeah.
We know that the average individual has 5 of these sleep cycles.
Yeah.
5 times 90 is 450 minutes of sleep,
right?
That is what a normal, quote, normal individual might have.
Right.
So first of all, if you add up 400, if you take 450 minutes and divide it by 60 just to get hours, it's 7.5 hours.
Right.
So right there, the 8-hour myth is out the door. The math doesn't even work, right?
Yeah,
it just doesn't, right? Yeah, so then what you do is you take your socially determined wake up time.
Mm-hmm.
What's that? I'll tell you what that is. That's when my dogs wake up, right? Or my kids wake up, you know, or the alarm goes off. Then you count backwards 6, 7.5 hours. So if you normally wake up at 6:30, go to bed at 11, see how you do, right? If you go to bed at 11 for 7 days in a row and you're waking up an hour before your alarm, then go to bed at 12,
Make
it simple, right? Yeah. But if you go to bed at 11 and you're waking up every day right on the nose at 6:30, guess what? You found it.
Yeah, that's your time.
It's literally that simple.
Wow. And I just think that that's such an important message, you know, for anybody to understand a chronotype and understand how, because I mean, if you're in a social situation or a family situation where everybody's up early, but you're the bear, you kind of get isolated and people get pissed off and like, and it's just because people just don't
have lion envy, dude. Like people who come to me and they're like, make me a lion, Michael, make me a lion. I don't know how. Like, it's genetic, dude. What do you want from me? You know,
there's something else I want to. You brought up there, which is you know the whole alarm clock thing, right? So I know with my sleep, like I'm quite conscious of how I sleep, and I know that if I would rather trust my body than a bleeding phone or an alarm clock beside me or. And the only time I put that, like I put that on today, right? I put that on today because I knew I was coming in for this interview.
Right.
And you had me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I put this on today. And I wake up half an hour before that goes off.
Right.
And I switch it off. But normally, if I need to wake up at a certain time.
You just look at the clock and then you wake up.
Yes. Well, no. I just naturally wake up at exactly that time. So over the years, I've really, really learned to trust my internal sleep and my internal clock. And I think that that's a really important message for people. You've got to trust your sleep. You've got to know what your sleep patterns are, and you've got to trust your internal clock. And you've got to learn to love it and move away from technology for that stuff and listen to yourself.
Totally agree. 100%. And that's kind of the message that we try to teach people is once they've kind of figured out this whole genetic chronotype thing, then it's like, respect it. Like,
yes. Yeah.
You know, and people are always like, oh, but my boss won't let me sleep late, or I've got to get up early to go to the gym, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that's BS. All right.
Yeah.
Do it for 21 days. Just do it for 21 days. If it doesn't change your life, go back to your old way of sleeping. I'm fine with it, but I promise you, you're going to love it.
But it's a funny thing because there is a whole part of our time and our space where we spend asleep, right? So nearly one third of our time, maybe a little less, but let's say it's one third, that amount of time we spend asleep, but it's kind of like we consciously choose to ignore that part of ourselves. But there is so much happens within that time period of sleep that let alone learning to trust your clock, but learning to trust the internal processes that happen during that time period, you know, where your lower self is whispering to your higher mind consciousness, you're working out, because I remember years ago, like I'd be at school and I'd be struggling. I struggled with math a lot until they got a tutor in, and I click, you know, your brain just clicks with math, and then suddenly, boom, I got the math thing. But I would have math problems and I'd be like, I'm not able to work this thing out. And my dad would look at me and he'd go, just go to bed and sleep in it. And I'd be like, what? Just go to bed and sleep. And I would go to bed and I would literally work out mathematical equations in my sleep and wake up in the morning and I'd have the result.
We all do. So, you know, you ever heard that old saying, sleep on it?
Yeah.
Right. So there's a reason that it works. So one of the functions of REM sleep, that's the rapid eye movement sleep, about 80% of the time you're dreaming, is during that particular stage is when we move information from our short-term memory to our long-term memory. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this right now. We never make a major decision in our house without sleeping on it first. Mm-hmm. Like we might discuss something at dinner. It could get heated. We could even be, you know, talking throughout our time before bed. But we always say whatever the issue is, whether it's my kids, my wife, whatever, we always say, we're going to sleep on it. We're going to see how we feel about it in the morning and then be able to really make a good, solid, rational decision. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I literally wake up with the answer 99% of the time, right? Mm. Because again, we're trusting this internal process. I love the way you say that, trust your internal process, right? Because what we're talking about is unconscious competence.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, is I don't have to be conscious. I have to trust the process. I know my body knows what to do. I'm going to allow it to do that. Mm-hmm. And that actually is a great attitude for people to have, for example, if they wake up in the middle of the night, mm-hmm. right? Because that happens a lot. I can't count the number of people who turn to me like, Michael, I wake up at 2:37 in the morning. What the heck is going on type of thing, right? And what do? They look at the clock. They get pissed off, right? And then all of a sudden it causes all this autonomic arousal. Their heart rate goes up. Their breathing goes up. Their blood pressure goes
up.
Because they're not trusting the process.
So you're talking to my wife here. Literally, this happens to my wife a lot. And then
I have not been talking to your wife.
But are you sure? But one of the things that will happen then is that my wife will pick up. So I wake up and like the light room is brighter because I love a dark room.
Yep.
The room is bright. I look over and she'll be on the phone and I'm like, dude, get off the phone. I have to play this particular part back to my wife tonight because this is what she does. I just want to, before you jump in, Emma, I know you've got loads of questions. I just want to ask one more thing. So it seems that there is a very mystical part of our lives when we detach from our sensory world and we sleep, right?
Correct.
And what I hear you're saying is we need to get to understand that side of ourselves. We need to be within our consciousness, our beta conversation right now. We need to understand that mystical part of us and the processes that happen within that time period and how important they are. You know, because sleep deprivation can send you crazy. It's a form of torture. Oh, yeah. But that's because it takes certain things away from who we are as a human to be deprived of things. That's what deprivation is. I'm depriving you of the wisdom and what actually happens and what the body needs to do as it sleeps. Mm-hmm. So just tell me what your throw is on that.
So I believe that there's multiple things that occur during sleep from an unconscious process. So number one, we're incredibly vulnerable, right? And we have to be able to accept that level of vulnerability in order to allow that process to occur, right? I think that's kind of what you're talking about here, right? Because I mean, even if you just look at it from a safety factor, like if you think about it from an evolutionary perspective, like this could, if we don't know why we sleep, this could arguably be the biggest mistake that was ever made in the evolutionary process, right?
Wow.
Because, I mean, just think about it, right?
Yeah, like, I love it.
You're lying there completely vulnerable. You're unconscious. A tiger, a lion, a person with a gun, an intruder, a terrible whatever could come and get you. So in this whole evolutionary process, sleep must do something really freaking important for you. For all of those other things, right, to be put aside and put you in this incredibly vulnerable position, number one. Number two, I believe it's energy transfer in certain ways, right? And so we have an energy that we're engaging with today, our conversation, our level of energy, all of these things, right? Well, all that happens when we sleep is that shifts, right? And it focuses inward and it focuses more on internal processing. But I just don't think people think about it because remember, sleep is amnestic. You don't remember the few minutes before you fall asleep, and you don't remember the minute or two after you wake up, usually, unless you're awoken by something, you know, frightening or a loud noise or something like that. So we don't kind of get that, oh, we're going into this learning phase. I need to appreciate that. It just kind of happens. And so one of the things that I have people do before bed that can actually help that process is called the gratitude list. I know it sounds a little hokey, but I'm going to tell you something. If you can list off all the things that you're grateful for, it changes your mindset. And mindset helps change your energy. And energy transfer then allows you to get there, right? And so in my mind, you really have to flip that switch. You've really got to be thinking of things that are positive, thinking about relaxation. Like tell your brain, hey, this is the time we do this.
Yeah.
And you know what? It will accept it. It might not be used to it. Do it during within the chronotypical schedules. But at the end of the day, I think that it's about vulnerability. It's about energy transfer. And it's just about allowing the process to happen. One of my favorite sayings is sleep is a lot like love. The less you look for it, the more it shows up.
Wow, I love it.
So I want to just go back to the sleep on it thing. You know, this is something we do as well. If we've got something in the morning that we have to discuss and we haven't talked about it, I'll literally call him, discuss it with him just so he can sleep on it so that we can come together the following day and get it done. And the concept of having the, like, the sleeping of it and in the morning having the answers. Oftentimes I'll go to bed not knowing and literally ask the question. And I heard you say on one of your, on a video that I watched of you talking, that because I get the answers as well in the morning. It's like I know exactly what I need, exactly how to approach a certain thing because I've sort of asked for that. But you said something a little bit about writing down something, and then when you wake up, writing down the answers or any thoughts, and then you'll have a new idea. Is that what you were saying? Can you talk about that
a bit? So what I was referring to there was people were talking about remembering their dreams.
They
were also talking about inventions and ideas and things like that. So there's two different sides to that story. So one, I keep a pad by the bed because a lot of people tell me that as they're falling asleep, they're like, oh my gosh, I just figured out my biggest business problem, or I've just cured cancer, or, you know, some big deal. Yeah. But then what they do is they can't stop thinking about it. And so they think and they think, and before they know it, 3 hours has gone by and they haven't slept. So I tell them to keep a pad and I say, look, jot down a couple of things. And then in the morning, pull it up and then try to go through it again and see what you have. I'll be honest with you though, none of them have ever worked for me. Like every idea that I think, like every time I think I've cured every problem in my business and I'm going to become a millionaire overnight, it doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. Well, one of the things that we do with some of our students is, especially for the ones that are like, I don't dream. I'm like, no. You may correct me here, Michael, but everybody dreams. Everybody dreams.
You don't remember
your dreams.
Correct.
But so one of the things that I would do with them was I would say to them, you got to have a piece of paper and a pad beside the bed. And before you go to sleep, bang your head on the pillow 3 times and say, when I wake, I'll remember my dreams. When I wake, I'll remember my dreams. When I wake, I'll remember my dreams. And what they would say to me is they would say, I'd wake up and I'd remember a dream. But leaning over and picking up that pen and that pad and sitting up and wanting to write. But have a voice recorder. Yeah, really, really good idea. Really good idea. But I just found that was, you know, first off, it was great because it helped them to actually realize that they were actually dreaming.
Right.
And which I think is important. The next thing was, you're aware of the work of Buckminster Fuller. Bookie Fuller, he was you know, in the 80s, he was the guy who was, you know, responsible for the human development movement. You know, he hung out with Warner Earhart, which eventually became Landmark Forum and blah, 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 blah. But I'm a big follower of Bookie's work. But he was one of the guys that said, you know, that sleeping was selfishness. So they'd be moving him from college to college and he'd power nap for an hour and a half and then boom, he'd be back up. And then, because he said, you know, and people would say to him, why don't you sleep? He said, because I haven't got time to waste like that. I have too much to do here. I have too much to impart on people. But it seems that, you know, I was interpreting what he was saying incorrectly, but what's your throw on short spurts of sleep throughout your life?
So there's three different ways you can kind of think of it. So there are some people that do sleep hacking, right? And they do what's called the Ultraman or Uberman schedule, which is called polyphasic sleep.
Right,
small amounts, like maybe 3.5 hours at night, and then you take naps throughout the day, and you have a grand total of maybe 4 hours of sleep in the day, but you have energy throughout the day. Right. So I'll tell you about polyphasic sleep.
Please,
It's terrible for you. is it possible? Yes, it is. Right. So I've had at least 3 CEOs come to me and say, I only want to sleep 4 to 5 hours a night. That's all I'm interested in doing. Can you do that for me? Yes, I can. I can show you. But there are multiple problems with doing it. So number one, if you have any proclivity for depression, by the third week, it usually pops and you end up with a pretty major depressive episode.
Wow.
So that can be a big problem, especially if people become suicidal and things of that nature.
Wow.
So any history of depression, and I automatically say, no, I will not do that with you.
Right.
Second thing is loneliness. Here's the thing. When you're the only person awake in your home, there's only so many videos you can watch on internet or have, you know, people that you can email, blah, blah, blah. The people that you love and care about, you're in opposition with them in many cases, right? And like, also, by the way, you don't get to do a lot of social things with them either, because you have to take naps at very particular times of the day in order for you to maintain this schedule. So you could be wanting to go out to lunch with your daughter and you have to go take a nap for 45 minutes. Right. So that becomes a hassle as well. I've only had two people in my career be able to maintain a polyphasic sleep schedule. One of the guys was an avid reader, and so he would actually read one or two books a night. That was his thing. I'll tell you now, I think it was obsessive compulsive. And then I had one guy who actually did perfectly fine. He worked at Google, and he learned how to play the drums. He read all the works of Shakespeare. Like, he was having a blast. It was like all the things that he wished he had time for to do, he was discovering time to do them. Right. But again, this is one patient out of I don't know how many dozens that kind of tried it. Now, there's also a second thing that you can think about, which is there are some people that are genetically short sleepers. Believe it or not, about 25% of the population only needs 4 hours of sleep a night.
Right.
Talk about lions, right? They kind of hit the genetic lottery, if you will, for lack of sleep. And they function perfectly fine. Like you and I would on our normal amount of sleep, they need four and they do great. To be honest with you, when I talk with people who are short sleepers, they hate it. There's nothing fun about it. Like all of us think like, oh my God, that would be great. I'd have so much more time. I could do so much more stuff. They're like, yeah, I've been like this my whole life and it sucks.
Yeah,
awake when nobody else is, and they're, you know, there's nothing fun about it.
Yeah. So, you know, you talked about REM and the importance of that. When can you talk to us about people snoozing, you know, and having the snooze button, what happens? Because REM happens at last, like fairly soon, just before you wake up, right?
So REM sleep is in every cycle throughout the night, but the preponderance of REM, or the largest bolus of REM, has a tendency to be in the latter third of the night. Now, you're hitting on one of my favorite topics, which is the snooze button. The single worst invention in all of sleep technology was the snooze button. So the average snooze is between 7 and 9 minutes long. And remember, your body can't actually get back into deep sleep that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. And so when you hit the snooze button more than once, all you're doing is giving yourself light, crappy sleep all morning long. So when I do lectures, and I do a tremendous, as you know, I do a tremendous amount of lectures. I always ask people, raise your hand if you hit the snooze once. Keep it raised if it's twice, three times, four times. I had 15.
Really?
It was like a 2.5 hour snooze fest, right? And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, this is stupid.
You better to just sleep. Just take the extra 2 hours.
Set your alarm for the last possible moment for you to wake up. If you're a night owl like me, a wolf, then you may want to give yourself one snooze. I personally don't need one because I've kind of trained myself not to, but a lot of people do.
So every now and then I get a client who'll say to us, you know, I play music when I sleep, or I listen, you know, there's this whole great CD set that's come out, and you know, it's meant to get you into this brain.
Or just having white noise in
the background. Yeah, white noise. So, and it could be lack of understanding, but I've always said, no, do not have, because your brain is not sleeping. It's paying attention to your outer world still. And now you're being outwardly influenced instead of being inwardly clear and calm and quiet, which is
where you're close, but it's not 100% that. So here's what we discovered is when it's too quiet, your hearing becomes more acute.
Wow.
And it's actually better, right? And so the reason people wake up due to sound is not from the sound itself, it's from the change of sound in volume. Okay. So if it was perfectly silent and your wife flicks on the TV, boom, even if she flicks it on a volume of like 4, which normally you would never even register, because it was silent before and then it hits, that's what causes it. Because what your brain is doing is it's worried. That's an alarm system that goes off, right? It's like, oh crap, somebody just came in the room to kill me, right? I need to wake up and figure this out. Yeah. And so that's what it's listening for when it comes to sound. However, you know, many people don't live in the best environments for sleep, right? Like, and by the way, some people have bed partners that snore, right? And that could be an issue as well. So I'm a big fan of sound machines if it's appropriate. Like if it's something that works well for you and you can get rid of something that's distracting you from sleeping, I don't think I have a problem with it. But if you put a gun to my head and you said, look, what is the general recommendation? That's easy. It's dark, it's quiet, it's cool. Right. You know, those are the three things that we know. It's hibernation time. Right. We know that that's when the body will sleep at its best unfortunately, the reality of the situation is, you know, we got kids that walk through, we have dogs, we have neighbors. My son called me up this morning and he was like, oh my God, somebody was driving a motorcycle by my house at 3 o'clock in the morning. Dad, right. What am I supposed to do? You know, that kind of thing. So
yeah. So then do you not feel, or do you not, does the data tell us, because I would have said that playing these meditation things, that, you know, these meditation CDs that people think they're, you know, they leave it running all night.
Let me address that particularly. So I like music without words, because that allows the brain to interpret it any way it wants. And that's a little bit less cumbersome than having to listen to words, interpret words, try to remember words, think about what's being said, things of that nature. Now, to be clear, you can't fall asleep to heavy metal, right? But, you know, an instrumental, classical music, white noise has actually been shown to be very effective.
The data shows that your brain is slipping into the proper brain waves, even though it's praying continuously throughout the night.
Absolutely. Because you got to remember, you've still got the alarm system on, right? Your brain is, you're always going to hear what's going on, because the brain has to know kind of as a security system. Now, the levels of that and the amount of that, of course, will probably affect the quality of the sleep that you're getting. Right? And so look, if you are in an apartment building and the person above you likes to play music at night, but you can sleep through it, does that mean you're still getting good quality sleep? Probably not.
I wanted to talk about, I can't remember the question. I had the question right now, this second. I hate it when that happens.
It does happen sometimes. It does happen to me. You didn't get enough sleep last night.
No, it's not that at all. That's what I was going to ask. Okay. So the effect of food and exercise on sleep and the quality of sleep that you get.
Yeah, so it's pretty dramatic, right? And so when we talk about food, the biggies that people ask me to talk about are caffeine and alcohol.
Yeah.
Sometimes cannabis as well. Some people consider that a food because you can eat cannabis in brownies and gummies and all those types of things. So we can talk about those things. Generally speaking, when we talk about food, there's a couple of kind of generalized recommendations. So number one, you don't want to go to bed hungry, but you also don't want to go to bed on a full stomach, because the body is meant to digest sitting or standing, not lying down. So number one, don't go to bed on a full stomach. You'll get really bad nightmares many of the time. In the sleep that you get just isn't that great, because your energy is really going into a different place. But if you haven't had a chance to eat very much, you shouldn't go to bed hungry either. I usually recommend like a 250 calorie snack for people. Maybe like an apple with some almond butter on it, you know, or a piece of, you know, whole grain toast with some kind of nut spread or hummus or something like that on it. You want to do a mixture of about 25% protein and about 75% carbohydrates. Right. So now you might be saying, what are you, 75% carbs before I go to bed, I'm going to start gaining weight. What are you talking about? Carbohydrates increase serotonin, which helps calm the brain down. Okay. Mm-hmm. The reason that we crave high fat, high carbohydrate foods when we're really sleepy is because our brains have got too much cortisol in there, and our brain is trying to calm it down and use our comfort foods. That's why we call them comfort foods, is because they actually produce serotonin in our brain and make us feel that way. Getting over to the side of alcohol, caffeine, and things like cannabis, all kinds of different effects on your sleep system, right? And so let's talk about caffeine first. So generally speaking, caffeine has a half-life of somewhere between 6 and 8 hours. So we really want people stopping caffeine by about 2 p.m. if possible, because an average bedtime is around 10. So it gives you 8 hours to kind of get at least half of it out of your system. To be clear, if you have no caffeine in your system, you will sleep better. Right. Okay. But I'm not so foolish as to think that people are going to stop drinking caffeine, especially during COVID. The other thing is, if you are interested in slowing down your caffeine intake, you need to be very careful at what you do. I've had two patients end up in the emergency room because they went cold turkey off of caffeine. Yes, really? I have. They were pot a day coffee drinkers, so 6 to 7 cups a day, which you'd be surprised isn't as much as you might think. And when they went cold turkey, one of them had a seizure and one of them had unbelievable insomnia, and it was a mess. So you want to limit your caffeine, not necessarily cut it off, if you're a caffeine drinker. And I tell people 2 p.m., right? 2 o'clock is probably the best time for you to stop drinking caffeine. Alcohol is a different story. I like wine. I like scotch. I like beer. I'm an equal opportunity drinker, as they say. But the effect that alcohol has on your sleep is completely based on the timing of ingestion. So there's a really big difference between going to sleep and passing out, right?
Yeah.
Passing out occurs when you've been drinking basically up until the moment of going to sleep. Right. So it takes the average human 1 hour to digest one alcoholic beverage. So if you have one glass of wine, you should drink one glass of water and wait 1 hour.
Right.
If you have two glasses of wine, you drink two glasses of water and you wait 2 hours before bed. Right. Once you hit the second glass, that's when things can get a little wonky in terms of accelerating. So when you hit the third beer, glass, or shot, alcohol doesn't seem to have the same effect. It doesn't seem to slow you down. It actually seems to ramp you up.
Right.
There's a really big difference between going to sleep and passing out. Mm-hmm. So it's all based on the timing of ingestion. So my basic rules is a 1-for-1-for-1 rule. One glass of alcohol, one glass of water, wait 1 hour before lights out. Two glasses, two waters, 2 hours. Again, what happens is when you get to more than two beverages, women have a tendency to get more excited. Men have a tendency to get more aggressive. Neither one of those is leading to sleep. So I would tell you, if you can cap it at two, you're probably going to do much better off from that standpoint.
Right. Okay.
Cannabis is a whole nother animal. Is cannabis legal where you guys are?
No.
Okay. No. So we can discuss it briefly. I live in California where it's actually recreational. You can walk into a store and buy it wherever you want.
Yeah.
Cannabis has actually been shown to be very helpful for some people for sleep in terms of lowering their anxiety and lowering their pain. But to be clear, you have to be careful when you're dealing with cannabis and sleep, because in some cases it can actually lower your REM sleep. And in other cases, it can actually increase your stage 3-4 sleep. So you have to sort of see how cannabis affects you and make sure that when you wake up, you're feeling refreshed and good and things of that nature.
So obviously, I mean, with the whole cannabis thing, they're still doing all the research.
And well, it's we're still not even very close
early
on the research,
days.
Man.
Yeah,
like, it's very I wish early we had days. Better research, but because it's been federally illegal here in the United States
for so long,
nobody's been doing the research. But I would argue that we're probably maybe less than 5 years away from really good research coming out. And, you know, full disclosure, I'm looking at developing my own line of sleep-friendly cannabis.
Yeah.
Because quite frankly, it works and people like it. And I think we can control it and we can get a really good sleep out of it.
So are we talking non-THC cannabis?
Oh no, full on THC.
Full THC.
So just on that, what about other supplements to help people sleep? Like melatonin and things that people take. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, there's four different things that I test in all of my patients. Magnesium, vitamin D, iron, and melatonin, okay? Those four things have a tendency to be deficient in many, many people around the world. And so my very first goal is to get everybody's level up to the right level so nobody's deficient in anything. So that way I can just see how you sleep, right? Because like as an example, like, you know, if you don't have enough magnesium in your body, that's a pretty easy fix. And it might fix all of your sleep problem right there. Mm. So my goal is always magnesium, vitamin D, iron, and melatonin. Let's talk about melatonin really briefly, because that's the one that everybody seems to want to know more about. Melatonin is a hormone, okay? Mm. You shouldn't just walk around taking hormones. So there's a lot of caution that should be used with melatonin. One of the things I tell people all the time is the correct dosage is between 0.5 and 1.5 milligrams. That's a very, very small dose. Here in the United States, we see it being sold in 3, 5, 10 milligram dosages. Is it by prescription or is it over the counter where you guys are?
Couldn't tell you.
It's over the counter.
Over the counter?
Over the counter.
Because in Germany, you have to get a prescription for it, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so when you think about that, like, why does Germany feel like it should be under prescription privileges and other places not? Well, I'll tell you why, because it's a freaking hormone and people need to think about it before they start using it.
So number one,
get the dose right. It should be small, 0.5 to 1.5 milligrams. Number two, if you're taking it in a pill, take it 90 minutes before you want to go to sleep, okay? It's not a sleeping pill, guys. So remember, there are two different systems for sleep. There's sleep drive and there's sleep rhythm, okay? Sleep drive is what makes you fall asleep. Sleep rhythm tells your body it's bedtime. Melatonin only affects sleep rhythm.
Right.
Melatonin doesn't make you feel sleepy. Melatonin tells your body it's time for bed. Those are two very different things in your brain.
So drive is like you're driven to eat, you're driven to drink water. Right. Okay.
Totally different process in the brain.
Right. And then, so tell us a little bit about iron and vitamin D.
So vitamin D turns out to be a circadian pacemaker, and it's great for energy. So I take 5,000 international units every morning, and it keeps my circadian rhythms in line, and it also gives me great energy. To be honest with you, I ran out, and I was out of it for like a week, and I was dragging. Like, I was like, wow, I'm surprised that this has this big of an effect on me. Wow. Also, to be really honest with you, I think it's close to 95% of the COVID deaths are in people with deficient vitamin D.
Deficient vitamin D. I've heard that actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So I've got every person I know on 5,000 international units of D3.
Because I just have to check how much I'm taking, because I take vitamin D, but I don't know exactly the units amount yet.
Yeah. Magnesium can be different for different people depending on what levels you need to take. I take 250 milligrams of magnesium in the evenings, and I find it to be quite helpful and allows my magnesium to be at the right levels. Iron is really more for women because we know that when women become anemic, they can actually get a syndrome called restless legs syndrome, where they get this creepy crawly feeling on their legs and they can't fall asleep, and it could be in their arms, it could be all over the place. So I'm always checking for iron there as well. And also iron is the main conductor for dopamine. So we also need to make sure that we've got enough iron in our system so that our pleasure centers, you know, kick off and things like that.
So another thing that I find happens to me, and this is going to sound a bit crazy, but if I eat too much cheese...
Oh, this happens to me too.
I have terrible friggin' nightmares. Like, I can wake up screaming.
It's a substance called tyrosine that's in the cheese. There's hard cheeses and there's soft cheeses. And it seems to be in one, depending upon the type of cheese, it actually has that, it can have that effect on people. Also, dairy is really not the best. The more studies that seem to come out about it, and I love cheese, dude, trust me, it's horrible. And I like the stinky cheeses and the really good taste. I got like all change all the No, dude, it's that dairy's terrible for your microbiome. It throws it into fits. Like, unfortunately, humans were just not meant to drink cow milk or goat milk, as the case may be. And so a lot of times that can actually have a pretty big effect on your dreams as well.
Right. So then another thing, I know. Another thing is, if I lie on my back, I'll have nightmares. And so I tend to lie on one side of my body, and I've ended up hurting one of my shoulder due to how I'm sleeping. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Like the way you sleep.
Why does the body want to do that? And what's the most optimal position to sleep in?
Right. So here's what's likely happening. So I haven't been able to do a full exam of you or anything like that, but if I had to guess, when you lie on your back, gravity pushes all of your anatomy towards the back of your throat. So your tongue moves back a millimeter, your tonsils move back a millimeter. What happens is there's a feeling of suffocation that can occur. And the way your brain is interpreting it, it's a threat. And so that might be where the nightmare is coming from.
Wow.
I have lots of patients who have sleep apnea who tell me they dream that they're stuck underwater, that somebody's putting a pillow on their head, they wake up from a nightmare, things like that. And it seems to have something to do with this anatomical recession when you're lying on your back. So when you're on your side, of course, your anatomy falls forward. And so you don't have that as an issue.
Wow, that's cool. And then the tendency to
fix it, by the way, if you want, just use a wedge. Just use a bed wedge. And so you elevate. So like if this is the mattress and you just use a little piece of foam that elevates your from your torso up, like you just kind of up, you'll take that gravity out of the equation. You'll probably be able to sleep on your back.
Wow. That is so good. That's good to hear, because I've really screwed my shoulder up over the past
years. Don't do that. Just get away.
But so then the other thing was, so I tend to, if I fall asleep on my left, I can fall asleep. If I turn to my right, I can't fall asleep. Why?
So there's different theories about different side sleeping and kind of what they do. The data is really more, to be honest with you, around females and specifically women who are pregnant, because the fetus, if you lie on a particular side, you can cut off blood flow to the baby and then nutrition to the fetus. But generally speaking, it kind of depends a little bit on your anatomy, as well as the length of time that you've been sleeping in that one position and sort of what it's doing to your posture and what it's doing to your position. One of the things that a lot of people don't think about is there's actually a sleep posture, right? So when you're standing up, you can slump your shoulders, you can, or you can stand up straight and feel really good because your body is flowing and, you know, everything's wide open and things like that. Same holds true with sleep. If you're in a kind of a weird, kind of funky, contorted position, you're probably not going to get the benefits that you're looking
for. Right, right.
I just want to touch on something that you mentioned about sleep apnea. So I want to, like, because how do we know that people don't have sleep apnea and, like, you know, when they wake up that they're not rested, that they actually haven't been sleeping properly, and that people who are being diagnosed as dolphins or even, you know, that haven't, that are actually having problems, you know, have sleep apnea instead of being a chronotype and what they can do about it?
Oh, yes, of course. So I address that actually in the very first chapter where I tell everybody, you need to be evaluated by a sleep specialist. Like if this doesn't change, we need to get you in and run a sleep study on you.
Yeah.
100%. Sleep apnea, the way most people determine that they have sleep apnea, honestly, they don't. It's their bed partner. Usually somebody tells them, they're like, dude, you stop breathing in your sleep,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Or you're snoring really loud and then it's super quiet and then you're like, and you kind of gasp and choke. Very rarely, maybe in less than probably 10% of the cases, do people actually wake up and say, oh my God, I was stopping breathing. What the heck was that? And then they go see their doctor. So usually it's a diagnosis that's made by the bed partner. So for people who are by themselves or sleeping alone or things like that, they can go years without knowing they've got a problem. But then they go on vacation and they're sharing a room with somebody and they're like, holy cow, dude, I had to sleep in the bathtub because you snore so loud. And then they start to get diagnosed and things like that.
I had
Neurology would include waking up with a headache, depression, waking up feeling unrefreshed. Believe it or not, for women, the inability to fall asleep. Very interesting. Many women present with insomnia that actually have sleep apnea. And then in some cases, it's people who are a little bit bigger. So thicker necks. Believe it or not, any male who has over an 18 and a half inch neck has a 94% chance of having sleep apnea. It's crazy.
Yeah. There we go. Because I was just about to talk about a buddy of mine who he went and was sleep tested. And during his sleep cycle, like he was waking up like 270 times and during his sleep cycle. So they were like, they were really worried about him. And he's a big guy, you know, like, and
then
over the past couple of years, he's really stacked on some weight. And it was like, you know, they were saying to him, your weight is causing you, it's going to kill him.
I'm going to be very clear about this.
Yeah.
Okay. Sleep apnea undiagnosed kills people.
Wow.
And the bigger you are, the worse it is.
Wow.
Right. And so if you're a big, big person, if you're 250 pounds plus, 300 pounds plus, 400 pounds plus, right, you got a lot of problems going on. And sleep is definitely one of them because just the sheer weight, like in many cases, believe it or not, the belly fat pushes the lungs so far up that your lungs can't even breathe their entire extension because there's so much belly fat pushing your lungs up.
Wow.
Right. We call this orthopnea because it's such a problem with some of these really, really big people. I mean, when I was in clinical practice and I was seeing like 30 patients a day, easily 25 of them were apnea. And it was 9 times out of 10, it was big people. But I had some people who were at my size who had rip roaring sleep. I had one guy stop breathing to sleep 100 times an hour.
Wow.
And he was my size. So you can't always judge that book that way.
Yeah.
But we have to be fair and say that it does seem to happen in bigger people. And if your buddy is a pretty big gentleman, he's going to have it and he needs to get it fixed. He needs to lose some weight.
So then the other thing is that, so these, you know, these machines that they put on, they're sort of a ventilator.
CPAP machines.
Tell me what your thoughts are on that.
Well, it's the number one treatment for apnea in the world. It's the most effective treatment. It works 98% of the time, but it's obviously one of the most barbaric things I've ever seen. Dude, it's a hairdryer blowing up your nose all night long to keep your throat from collapsing on itself. That's not medicine. That's like plumbing, you know, or air conditioning, or whatever.
We brought in the plumber to fix your fucking sleeping.
Exactly. So we're starting to see some things that are better right now. So for example, there's a new technology called Inspire. Very interesting. So they place a battery pack underneath your clavicle. They run wires up to your vagus nerve, which is just beneath your tongue. And every time when you fall asleep that your tongue starts to fall back, it clicks in with a minute charge. You can't feel it. that makes your tongue sit forward.
Wow.
Like, there are some really interesting things that are going on these days.
Have you tried that? Have you tried it?
Myself? I don't have sleep apnea.
But have you put the appliance? The
So it had somebody, well, it's indwelling. No, it's inside of you, dude.
What?
It's underneath your skin, underneath your pectoral muscle. Wires go up into your neck.
Wow, we're becoming androids. Like, we're becoming androids.
No, not really. I mean, here's what I would tell you is that's kind of, you know, I mean, there's an interesting argument for, do you put machinery in your body, right? I get that. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's better than many of the surgical options that are out there, right? Because many of the surgeries, they just carve it all out. Incredibly painful. 50% of the time, the tissue grows back. I mean, dude, it sucks. Yeah. Now, what I will tell you is I've been over at UCLA and I've been working with an ENT there, and he's pretty progressive. And now we're starting to see this happen a lot more. Here's what they do now, which is kind of cool, is they bring you in, they put anesthetic in your arm, and then they put a camera up your nose and down your throat, and they watch. And they wait to see where the throat collapses, and then they target pick, and they only remove that area of tissue, as opposed to taking all of the tissue out and having this terrible recovery. Wow. So in my 30 or 25 years of practice, I've sent 6 people for these surgeries. 3 of them during my early practice before I came to Los Angeles, all 3 were failures, all 3. Tissue grew back, more apnea, it was a mess.
Really?
Okay, and I was like, I'm never sending a patient to surgery again, because I mean, it was a mess, right?
Major job.
Right, got here to UCLA, and I've had 3 patients go through my buddy at UCLA, all of them fixed like that.
Really?
No repercussions, it's been great. So I feel like we're starting to see more progress. Also, by the way, they have oral appliances now. These are like mouth guards that you can wear that slowly brings your jaw forward. So if you look at my chin, how it's in front of my lips, many people with apnea, it's called retrognathia, or their chin is behind their lips because their jaw is displaced backwards. So you can take a mouth guard, like, you know, like a rugby player would wear, but it's got an upper and a lower, and the lower is a little bit further forward, maybe by like a millimeter or two, and it pushes the jaw forward and opens up the airway.
So I know we're going to finish up in a minute. Yeah. I just had one more question about hacking consciousness and that sort of stuff, and hacking, you know, being able to get higher levels of productivity. And I know that you've been in with Google, and I know that those guys are just, how do we hack consciousness? How do we improve creativity? Can you give us any quick hacks?
You know what? I can. I'll tell you what my favorite sleep productivity hack is.
Yeah.
I call it the Napa latte. All right?
Okay,
so what you do is you take a cup of drip black coffee and you throw in three ice cubes. You guys call them a long black, right? Is that what you call them there?
That's what we call them.
Yeah. By the way, best coffee I've ever had was in Australia.
Yep.
No question about it. Like,
I don't know how people do this.
We go to America. We'd be like,
people lining up in front of Starbucks and go, oh my God.
I'll go in and there'll be a coffee connoisseur and I'm like, this guy has no idea.
I know.
Can't drink coffee in America.
Yeah, coffee in America stinks compared to where you guys are. It's jealous for sure. So you take a cup of coffee, put ice cubes in it merely to cool it down, and you drink it as quick as you can. Then you immediately close your eyes and you take a 25-minute nap. Now, let me explain to you the science behind this. So it turns out that we get sleepier and sleepier throughout the day because of something called adenosine building up in our brains. Yeah. So when a cell eats a piece of glucose, something comes out the back end. One of those things is adenosine. It kind of works its way through the system, goes to very specific receptor sites in your brain, and then it accumulates and you get sleepier and sleepier and sleepier. Here's the factoid that you don't know. If you look at the molecular structure of adenosine and the molecular structure of caffeine, they're off by 1 molecule. That's it. So they actually fit inside each other's receptor sites perfectly.
Wow.
So when you take the 25-minute nap, you burn through the adenosine, the caffeine is literally waiting in the wings, it clicks in, you're good for 4 hours guaranteed. That's my favorite hack.
So anybody can do that. Whether you're a bear, a dolphin.
It doesn't matter, dude. You can be a platypus and you can do a
So that's if you haven't had sleep.
That's really one of those things that I have a tendency to use with my clients when like they had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to come in to do something special and they're kind of dragging for the rest of the day. Right. You, to be clear, you should not be doing a Napa latte every day. This is kind of reserved for situations where you kind of didn't get enough last night.
That you need to be on.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
So a triple shot coffee, three shots, is that right?
Depends. I mean, whatever you want. I personally, I use drip black coffee and I like it to be about 100 milligrams of caffeine. So because remember, shots can have less caffeine, not more caffeine than a full cup of coffee. So I would say you want to keep it somewhere between 100, 150 milligrams.
I used to drink coffee because I'm Italian, you know, we had the little espresso. I used to drink the coffee and go straight to sleep and sleep fine. But I can't do that anymore. I don't drink coffee at all now. I drink decaffeinated, but nothing caffeinated because of the fact that it screws with me.
So here's what's interesting, and I find this mostly in my Italian descent patients. Because you guys love your Italian coffee.
Yes.
Wow, I've never seen anything like it. here's what's fascinating is I got into an argument with an older Italian gentleman. I mean, he was like, he espresso all day long.
Yeah.
Sleep, right? And they're little, you know, it throws in a cube sugar, the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And first of all, it's delicious, right? So I started talking with him and so he finally agreed to let me study him. And I actually was able to show him that he was barely getting into the deeper stages of sleep because he was having so much caffeine. Yeah, so just because you fall asleep doesn't mean that the quality of that sleep is good. I think that's been kind of a theme that we've been talking about here today, right? Is sleep quality and maintaining that high level of sleep quality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do want to ask one more thing before we finish up.
You guys just said that like 20 times.
I know, but I do want
to... This tells us that we love your info.
But I know we've got people listening that are parents, especially new parents. So I want to give, how do you deal with it if you're not getting sleep because you're a new parent and you've got to deal with the kids? And also, how do you deal with it if your kids and you are on different chronotypes and you've got to deal with that in your family? Can you give us a short answer to help with those?
Sure, absolutely. So depending upon the age of the child, so if we start it with itty bitties, infants, toddlers, that kind of stuff, there's a lot of issues with sleep that are kind of going on. What I oftentimes ask is if there's two people in the household, is we take turns, right? And so I'm a doctor, and so I'm used to being on call, if you will. I don't know if you've heard of that term.
So what we
do is we say mom is on call Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you know, partner's on call Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and we flip a coin on Sundays. And what's nice about that is the responsibility is a known situation, right? And so it's Tuesday, it's not my night, they're going and they're gonna deal, I can relax and go to sleep. Because what happens when a baby is crying is both parents are usually up.
Right.
Usually one person is fake sleeping, and usually it's the guy, by the way.
You're not guilty.
Bam!
I know, dude, there was actually a study done and like all bets are off now. I use the on-call method, or I can actually use a differential chronotype to help out as well. So for example, if one parent is a lion and the other is a wolf, then you can have the wolf monitor the child until about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And then you can have the lion monitor the child, you know, from that point forward. So that way that you can kind of split up a night based on chronotype.
So at least the sleep occasionally is not interrupted is basically what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. It's really about mitigating your sleep deprivation.
Yeah.
And then also for the person who does have to stay up, then we usually create a napping schedule for them so they can catch up on their sleep and get a couple of naps during the day.
Right.
So Michael, tell us about your podcast, tell us about your book, and where can people get to you?
So I'm super easy to find on the internet. It's just thesleepdoctor.com. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to forget that one. I have a new podcast out. It's called Sleep Success with Dr. Michael Bruce. And we've been having a lot of fun. We've interviewed people like Paris Hilton and Steve Aoki. We're also interviewing sleep researchers. So it's a fun interview type of show. There's about 20, 25 minutes with a guest. And then I take questions from all around the world. So you guys are all welcome to submit questions. Who knows? I might answer your question on my podcast. But it's a lot of fun. And then if you want to learn your chronotype, I would really recommend checking out chronoquiz.com. It takes about 3 minutes. And then what's cool about it is now once you take the quiz, I'll send you an email back, not only with your results, but I teach you like what time to go to bed, what time to drink coffee, what time to exercise, things like that.
Yeah, it's really good. Great. Oh, it was so good talking to you.
It was great hanging out.
Hearing all that info. Thank you so much. We appreciate
really,
it.
Really, really appreciate it. Thanks a million, Michael.
Oh, guys, it was my absolute pleasure. I enjoyed both of you and your questions, and I'm thankful that your audience is receptive to learning more about sleep.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.